From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. The day after a momentous but anticlimactic election day, there is no definitive answer still as to who will be the next president of the United States. But projections show that former Vice President Joe Biden will likely eke out a win. Going into the election, polls showed Biden with a large lead nationwide and narrow leads in states like Texas and Florida. But President Donald Trump won those two large states, making the race more competitive than expected. What does Biden's probable narrow victory mean? Arun Gupta is an investigative journalist who's written for The Washington Post, The Nation, Raw Story, The Guardian, and Jacobin, and The Intercept. He's also a regular news correspondent for Rising Up. Welcome to the program, Arun.
Good to be with you, Sonali.
So let's make it clear that we still don't know the results of the election, but if the projections are to be believed, Biden will likely win the Electoral College. But a lot of people on Election Day were deeply disappointed who were watching the polls because that landslide that they were expecting did not transpire. I mentioned Texas and Florida. There were several other states as well. What does this mean for you?
Well, so it's not the complete disaster if Trump had won. You know, first of all, let's step back. If it wasn't for COVID, Trump would have cruised to re-election because he was spending trillions of dollars in this type of like corporate and military Keynesianism that was propping up the economy, and he had a lot of support for that. So it's COVID who really defeated Trump.
But and I want to say, actually, Arun, I remember you saying that 6 to 8 months ago when the pandemic began, predicted that if there's anything that would take down this president, it would be this pandemic.
Yeah. What's disturbing is, like, look, this guy has killed over 300,000 Americans. I'm including excess mortality in that will come out, you know, months, years down the road to get a more accurate picture of how many the pandemic has killed, not the official count of whatever 230 something thousand. It's well over 300,000 right now. So he has killed more Americans than Hitler did. And yet he increased his vote total by at least 7 million over 2016. This is deeply disturbing and shocking. And right now, the most powerful person in a Biden presidency is not Biden. It's going to be Mitch McConnell. And he's going to, I think, realize his dream of, you know, what his goal with Obama was to make him a one-term president. He failed. It's hard to see how Biden can be anything but a one-term president. First of all, Biden is not going to run for re-election in 2024. I mean, you know, let's be frank, the guy is basically a neoliberal corpse. So the idea is he would hand off, you know, the presidency to Kamala Harris. And I'll handicap it now. If he was smart, what he would do is resign in January of 2023. So she would have less than 2 years in office, which would allow her to be elected twice under the term limits for the president. You can serve two full terms or 10 years in total. It would give her enough time in office to have the aura of being a president. But he's certainly not going to run in 2024. And even if it looks like Trump will be forced out of office, right? The noise he's making now is not having much of an impact. But I guarantee you that if he doesn't run, it's going to be Don Trump Jr. And he's going to start running the instant it is clear he's pushed out of office. So we're not going to be rid of this nightmare. And I think, you know, what we're seeing is the realization of a failed state in this country. I mean, the failures are just absolutely everywhere. No one is left off the hook. First of all, polling has proven to be a complete disaster. When we dig into the numbers, you know, Ohio was supposed to be on the cusp. Texas was supposed to be on the cusp. You know, it looks like that Trump has won these states.
And even for Senate races, they looked much more competitive than they turned out, with Lindsey Graham and Jamie Harrison, Mitch McConnell and Amy McGrath. And both of those Republican incumbents won pretty handily.
Yeah, and even ones that were supposed to be strongly for the Democrats, like Gideon in Maine against Susan Collins, you know, Cunningham still had an advantage against Tillis. You know, it looks like they did not pick up really that many seats, despite having an incredibly favorable map.
And so do you care to have an analysis of why the polls can't be trusted anymore?
Well, I think what we're seeing is, you know, the far right has, goes back to Goldwater, the Powell memo in the early 70s. You know, this is the guy who would go on to become a Supreme Court justice, arguing that the right needs to build this kind of alternative ecosystem to challenge a liberal hegemony. His argument was not to attack the left, because the radical left, because they don't have a lot of support anyway, but more the liberals who were indoctrinating, you know, in his terminology, responsible for the radicalization of youth. And we've seen the right systemically go about this. You know, this is when the Heritage Foundation is founded. I believe it's when the Federalist Society is founded. And they went systemically about building this complete separate power structure. Now, you know, they do have a number of advantages, because I think we've probably talked about this. Essentially, police, property, and priests interact to all support the right. So evangelical churches, private property, especially housing, that's where people's wealth and intergenerational wealth is held. And what do the police protect? They protect property, and protecting property means protecting the color line, right? It means racist policing. And so the right has an advantage, and there is no kind of left material system that is anything similar to that. You know, unions have all been decimated. You know, one of the disturbing things is that in 2016, a majority of union voters, not union households, union voters, went for Trump in Ohio. And it looks like, yet again, the Democrats lost union voters by 14 percentage points. Right?
But why are the polls not capturing these trends? Is it that they're shy Trump voters as they were ahead of 2016?
I don't think it's shy. I'm calling it is hidden Trump voters. These are people who exist completely outside of the
expertocracy. So they're not the so-called likely voters that polls like to talk to.
They're not the likely voters. They're not capturing for this cult of personality that Trump has really built. And that is not going to go away anytime soon, because he is going to be nursing, you know, the mother of all grievances until the day he dies, if he is forced out of office. And so... You know, he's able to mobilize all these people. And this is not about, there's no signs of theft. There's no signs of, you know, that somehow there was, you know, Russian or Iranian or Chinese interference or Israeli interference. The number mail-in ballots appears to be at most that were not processed, maybe it's 300,000, and it could be far less. And that just doesn't make a difference. I think what the real story comes down to is, yet again, the Democrats, and we have to see that the tactics and campaign strategy flow from the ideology. These are not separate, right? Because why would the Democrats, and I've been saying this for months, run the same disaster strategy as they were in 2016, which was to chase after white racists and Republicans? And we see, like, you know, in numerous states, like Biden, like, increased his share of the vote among white women by, like, you know, 1.5%, or among white college graduates by 1%. Meanwhile, Trump is doing better among African American men, doing significantly better among Latino men. He basically is increasing percentages across the board, and it's deeply disturbing. And it comes down to the fact that the Democrats don't stand for anything. Biden could and should have been out there saying, we're going to provide, the first thing we're going to do is provide economic relief to everyone. He should have been campaigning, we're going to start, you know, the $600 a week checks again. I mean, you know, he could have been attacking Trump on medical insurance much more harshly. It's just like, you know, look,
and we know that in Florida, there was this fear when Bernie was running in the primary that his associations with socialism would alienate Cuban Americans and Venezuelan Americans and those sort of anti-socialist immigrants that have settled in Florida. But they rejected Biden for the same reasons, even though Biden rejected socialism, because Republicans were able to effectively paint Biden as a socialist regardless. So why not embrace it?
Yeah. And you know, the New York Times a couple of weeks ago, a week or two ago, had a story about just the huge numbers of people who are not going to vote this time. And they were looking at Pennsylvania, and it's just like well over a million voters. And when you look at the profile, it's just like so many of them are single moms who are just like struggling every day to survive. They don't see the government doing anything for them. And of course, what have the Democrats really done for them? Now, I'm not going to say like, you know, Obamacare is a nothing. It is something, but it's not stopping medical bankruptcy. It's not helping you necessarily access your coverage if you don't have money to meet all your deductibles and co-payments, you know. But instead of saying like, you know, we're going to be providing childcare, free, you know, universal higher education, you know, massive jobs program, you know, pandemic relief, Medicare for all, they are not offering anything to the base. And so they are ignoring them. That's why.
So Aruna, just to pick up on the fact that you said earlier that Trump actually garnered more votes this time than he did overall, this time than he did 4 years ago. But so did, I mean, Biden garnered even more votes than Hillary Clinton won by, right? Because we had overall turnout much, much higher than 4 years ago. So even if Trump won over more voters, Biden, it appears with the popular vote, Democracy Rising is projecting that he will likely have an excess of 6 million votes over Trump in the popular vote when all is said and done. And it's overwhelmingly these, you know, communities of color that have voted for and young voters, although Trump won a bigger share of young voters than I think people expected, something like a third of voters 18 to 29. We just had more people coming out to vote. And of course, Trump got a share of those extra votes as well.
Well, I think when we end up, you know, crunching the data, what we're going to see is that white voters turned out significantly more. Are we going to see a rise in African-American participation? Maybe we'll see some over 2016, but I don't think we're going to be returning to 2008 levels. And, you know, so let's look at it this way also. Look, Trump and his campaign and the right have built these advantages. They have a much more superior digital voter outreach campaign in terms of individual targeting. He has this just absolutely ginormous social media megaphone. The right basically owns Facebook, and he has Twitter. He had his Jim Jones suicide rallies, you know, to juice up his base and then, you know, kill them, some of them.
Leaving a trail of COVID super spreader events around swing states, yeah.
Right, and abandoning all those elderly voters state after state, you know, because right. they're too cheap to
in the freezing cold or the searing heat, yeah.
So where the Democrats could potentially make up for this was in door knocking and get out the vote. And the part of the reason that, you know, Trump has proven to be a superior politician is because he says things that others won't say, but that's correct. The way that he was mocking Biden for hiding in the basement for months, he was on target with that. The Biden campaign did not get to door knocking until October. And the thing is, this was an obvious disastrous decision because you're going to have to do it eventually. The longer you wait, the more opportunity cost loss there is. And so then the logical conclusion is we need to do door knocking right away. And I was talking to people who are doing door knocking, and they were just told crazy stuff. Like, you know, when you go up to a house, and this is what one union organizer actually told me, you knock on the door, and when the person answers the door, you ask, if they're not wearing a mask, you ask them to put on the mask. And the union organizer said, after two doors, he stopped doing that because it's just like, this is so insulting to telling people in their own homes. It's just like, all you do is step back. You know, you step back 8-10 feet, you have your mask on, it's all fine. You know, you have a conversation with them. So they, this was where the Democrat advantage was, and they completely flubbed it. But it flows from an ideology of not caring about the working class, the white working class, the black working class, the brown working class. And so this is why I think you have so many, you know, people of color who drifted towards Trump. It's not about machismo. They don't see their lives being improved, so they go for, like, you know, the more emotional appeal.
Or the person that's promising an economic recovery regardless of where the pandemic is, because they're desperate and they're struggling.
Yeah. So this, but, you know, I mean, ultimately, the question is, what can Biden do? Well, Trump has shown what he can do just wielding the executive branch. And so Biden, I mean, he should send a bill to Congress for complete legalization of undocumented immigrants that'll get rejected by the Senate, and then just issue a pardon to all 11 million undocumented immigrants. He can do that.
He can just pardon 11 million undocumented immigrants as president.
Why not? The pardon is pretty expansive. You know, will he?
And what would that do in terms of a political future? Aside from, of course, improving the lives of 11 million people, which is huge.
Well, I mean, of course, the right would try to weaponize that. That doesn't make them citizens. I'm not sure how they would get citizen status from there. You know, if, you know, what he can do.
It just protects them from being detained and deported.
If he pardons them for all, like, crimes related to, like, crossing the border or being in the country illegally, they then have, you know, this kind of, like, semi-legal status, but that doesn't give them green cards. It certainly doesn't give them citizenship. You know, he can certainly, I think, basically, if not abolish ICE, just throw so many wrenches into its machinery as to make it completely ineffective, which again, he should be doing right away. But, you know, we're not going to see anything on climate change. We're not going to see anything significant on COVID relief. You know, we're certainly not going to see anything in terms of court packing. And, you know, the staggering sums of money that was, you know, dumped into these races and these Senate races. And I was talking to other, you know, organizers who were furious, you know, like, who were trying to get out the vote in Latino communities. There was also reporting about this, and that the Biden campaign is saying, we don't have any money, even as they're raking in billions of dollars, they're spending.
Tell me about it, Arun. I was in a pledge drive asking people to donate money to KPFK, and people are, of course, understandably giving money to these political campaigns because they were seeing that very sophisticated messaging. And, you know, Jamie Harrison raked in millions and millions, Amy McGrath did, and both lost pretty badly.
And I don't think people even know what they're supporting. I mean, it's just like, you're better off, like, you know, lighting cigars with $100 bills. You know, Amy McGrath in the primary, at least, ran on basically her approach was, I will work better for Trump. That's what I will work better with Trump than McConnell. That's what she was repeatedly saying. And you know, I forget who, it was Charles Booker, the young rising star who nearly took her out in the primary. He was kind of a Jamie Harrison in style, you know, young, dynamic, exciting, the voting base. And, you know, these have all been disasters. I mean, Michael Bloomberg, this brilliant businessman who just burned through over $1 billion, both on his campaign and all, for just no gain whatsoever. It's just like spending all this money on elite politics is a disaster, but this is who the Democrats are.
So when we look at the race, you know, look back at the race in terms of lessons learned for progressives, you know, we saw Bernie with two failed primary runs, but we also have this growing squad of young Congress members of color, and the squad did expand on Election Day with some new blood, Jamal Bowman and Cori Bush, and all four members of the freshman squad won re-election. Are there lessons there that one can learn?
Yeah, stand for something. Actually, you know, deal with people's daily struggles. It's really not that hard. You know, what it's what, you know, theorists and intellectuals call social reproduction. You know, people need childcare. They need reliable, low-cost, efficient transportation. You know, they want to know their medical bills. You know, their healthcare is consistent and taken care of and is not going to bankrupt them, that they have good schools to send their children to, safe places for them to play, and a healthy environment. But all of this requires attacking the power and wealth of the ruling class, which the Democrats are not going to do. Remember, Biden is a guy who represents the banks and pharmaceutical companies.
So when we look back at the money that was spent as well, it looks as though corporate America is doing just fine. I mean, there were a lot of races that money was spent on in California, a lot of ballot propositions that went the way that corporations wanted them to, the most high-profile one being Prop 22 that was backed by Uber and Lyft and that basically protects their right to screw over workers. And Wall Street is happy with Biden. It seems as though regardless of what ended up happening at the polls in local statewide or national races, corporate America is sitting pretty.
Oh, I think they're very happy at the outcome. It's total gridlock, which means nothing's going to happen in terms of reversing the Trump tax cuts. Nothing's going to happen in terms of a Green New Deal. Their profits are completely safe. You know, like I said, Biden has a lot of leeway with the executive branch, but I think now we'll also start to see the Supreme Court decide that this, you know, overreaching executive power that they were endorsing with Trump is, oh, it's now going to be unconstitutional with Biden. I think the real lesson here is the need to do long-term base building. And this is something that the left is frankly terrible at. Unions, organized labor, have been a real failure at this. There are a few exceptions with locals here and there. You know, liberals, certainly all they care about is fundraising. But there's just a need to get back to basics to build the type of power from the ground up. And we have to stop thinking in terms of election cycles or that the planet's going to end in the next 5 or 10 years. This is a lifetime project, and it's going to take decades to build power to defeat the right.
Arun, I want to thank you so much, as always, for joining us today. It was a pleasure to have you on.
Thank you, Sonali.
My guest has been Arun Gupta. He's an investigative journalist who's written for The Washington Post, The Nation, Raw Story, The Guardian, The Intercept, and Jacobin. He's also a regular news correspondent for our program, and we've been discussing what it means that Trump was not defeated in a landslide on Election Day. I'm Sonali Kohatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter, find our audio podcast on iTunes and Spotify.